You know, with another federal election almost upon us, today's topic is particularly pertinent, as although it deals with provincial politics, it questions if our democratic system is actually working. In the last Alberta general election, only 41% of registered voters went out to vote. And I hope that's not a harbinger for what will happen next Tuesday in the federal election. Today's session is the third in a series asking that if by ignoring the provincial poll, Albertans have given the stalemate government a free ride. Paul Hinman, the leader of the Wild Rose Alliance, addressed this topic in May here at SACPA. And last month, the leader of Alberta's NDP, Brian Mason, spoke to the issue. Today, we're very pleased that Bridget Pastor, now the deputy leader of the Alberta Liberals, is here to give us her take on the question. And on December 11th, Greg Whittick of the governing party has agreed to give us his take. Ladies and gentlemen, Bridget Pastor was elected to her second term as the MLA for Lethbridge East in March. She serves as a member of the Privileges and Elections, Standing Orders and Printing Committee, and is the Deputy Chair of the Standing Committee on Health. In addition, she serves as the Official Opposition Deputy Whip, the Shadow Minister for Seniors and Community Supports, the Shadow Minister for International and Intergovernmental Relations, and the Shadow Minister for Municipal Affairs. And as I mentioned earlier, Bridget is now the deputy leader of Her Majesty's official opposition in Alberta. Now that's quite a workload. In fact, I wonder if anyone could actually do it. But that is at the heart of today's questions. Have Albertans given the stalemate government a free ride? Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome Bridget Pastor.
Thank you very much, Trevor, and good afternoon, everyone. Before I get started, a couple of explanations. I've got a bad cold, so I may drink a lot of water. I'm waiting for an implant. I've got a brace in my mouth, and I start to lisp. So other than that, we're good to go. Thanks very much for that introduction, Trevor. You know, I listen to that stuff and I think, holy smokes, I'm not old enough to have done all of that. However, time does have a way of flying by. In fact, it was in September of 05, the last time that I addressed SACPA. And I see many of the same faces. And you know, we just haven't aged, have we? Not at all. But I also see those same faces reflecting the interest and the concerns for our future. It's a bit frustrating that we must still fight the same battles when all we want is an open, transparent, and accountable democratic government. I always agree, well, mostly I always agree, with Gordon Campbell when he says that democracy is strengthened by open debate and discussion. Secrecy is usually used for the control of people, dissension, or even worse, controlling of ideas. I think this is a great idea of asking the same question of different people and hopefully getting many different thoughts for you to consider. So the question today is the same as for the previous speakers. Have Albertans given the stalemate government a free ride? Whether Albertans have given this government a free ride or not, the government is behaving as though they have. One answer is yes, because they have the majority of the seats in the legislature by a very large margin and really don't have to answer to anyone. And it would appear that that's including the voters. I am asked why this government does this or that. Why are controversial bills brought in at the very end of the session and sometimes passed within 2.5 days from introduction? For instance, Bill 26, the Labor Act, which undermined unions' ability to organize and use MRF. This Bill 26, under Section 7 of the Charter, could be open to challenge. A bill passed so quickly leaves no one time to stage any true protest either in the House or outside of the House, and certainly no time for lobbying either for or against. Why does the government act this way? The answer is because they can. Another answer could be no. Albertans haven't given Stelmach a free ride because almost 60% didn't vote. He won it almost by default. Unfortunately, our first-past-the-post system allows this default position. However, the free ride may look good in the House, but in the real world of today, that free ride has become like an out-of-control roller coaster. He said he wouldn't put the brakes on. Well, I think they've been put on for him. But what about us? I don't believe that either Stelmach or his government is prepared for the boom balloon to deflate. Where is a contingency plan for when the boom is going to bust? As everybody knows, it's going to happen sooner or later. How to react to falling oil prices, stock market crashes, real estate value prices falling, decreasing investments, harder to get credit, and an increased homeless population? Affordable housing is not only for our citizens and the influx of migrants from other parts of Canada, but also for the numbers of temporary foreign workers that are increasingly coming to our province. Both Brian Mason, leader of the New Democratic Party, and Paul Hinman, leader of the Wild Rose Alliance Party, have spoken to this topic, and we agree on many issues. But I don't believe that this government has a plan. I think this government is learning as it goes. They have yet to show any foresight beyond that of indefinite rain. Take Minister Evans and her multiple budget disorder. Any good person knows that a forecast is put in place, budgets are created accordingly, and then once the fiscal year is up, checks and balances are employed. Not in this province. When the government ran into bumpy times this past summer, as the public became more informed about the labor bill, separate school funding that was unbudgeted for, and the ever-increasing criticism of lax and ineffective environmental regulations, the government diverted attention by announcing the windfall profits from the oil and gas industry. But yesterday, oil was down to 87.87 cents U.S. Last week, this budget needed to be amended for the third time as a result of the economic realities of softening markets spreading throughout all of the world. The government didn't have a plan. They would have been closer on target with their undervaluing the market last spring, but instead they said all is well. I believe the Auditor General thinks otherwise, and I'll speak about that later. Throughout this whole boom, has there been any savings, the kind that Peter Lougheed envisioned so many years ago? I suspect not. This was to be our rainy day fund. How much is our heritage fund worth? How much of it is tied up in real estate? Where was the plan for our heritage fund? Most plans, especially project plans, usually have an end result with a clear picture of the mandate, like who, what, where, and why are we doing this, and the list of possible things that can go wrong. Then it's costed out and adjusted accordingly. Then the discussion and the process is to work backwards and put in the timelines. By a fluke of timing, maybe this practice of lowballing prices of oil per barrel may pay off. We will still be okay, but the huge surpluses that have been projected will continue to decline. But I mean, after all, what's a few billion dollars or two between friends? Interestingly, as an aside, the revenue from the VLTs is probably going to be more than from the oil. $2 billion of that surplus was earmarked for oil company carbon sequestration schemes, which, by the way, the Auditor General has pointed out that the targets set by the government can't be met without measurable goals and targets and a plan to achieve them. These targets have not been set, and there is no plan. As a result of this, the Auditor General feels this government cannot meet its 2020 or 2050 goals for emission reductions. Premier Stelmach offered after the stock market crash on Monday, "We're holding firm, we'll be okay." As I said, I mean, a billion here or there. And now he's going to go on a trip to try and bolster up Alberta's reputation as a great place to invest and that our oil really isn't that dirty. But a lot of that dirty oil is still being sent in the millions of barrels to the U.S. upgrading facilities. Certainly Kevin Taft would have had those upgraders built right across Western Canada and created another value-added industry for Canadians. It also made sense to have them in provinces where water was more plentiful than in Alberta. But we're learning. They're learning, we're learning. One of Minister Liepert's most recent thoughts, he said the Third Way failed in part because it was unveiled as one entire package, vulnerable to criticism. He continued referencing Klein's Third Way was failing because people were allowed to pick at certain things they didn't like. I think what he was referring to was that when Bill 11, a health bill, was introduced and clearly going the way of private medical services, thousands and thousands of people rallied on the ledge steps and said no. I still believe from the polling and the people that I come in contact with, the answer clearly remains no. Especially when we compare what happens when an insurance adjuster determines what you can afford for treatment. The thought processes of citizens not being able to criticize is a scary one. That thinking sounds to me like fear and intimidation. Minister Liepert said that part of our strategy this time is to thoughtfully, on a well-defined basis, roll out for Albertans what we intend to do, and in each case have a buy-in that we're doing the right thing. This is good, but I use the analogy of only a couple of oil well digs here and a couple of oil well digs there. But then the question becomes, what is the cumulative effect of what is not being accounted for when we put all of the oil wells in the same spot? It would appear to me it's the same sort of problem. We're doing bits and pieces, but what is the end result? One piece is good, one piece is good. When you put the two together, they may not be so good. I want to understand the whole plan before this reorganization. This isn't a Donald Trump building or whatever else that he wants to build. This is a public health system for all, using public dollars for which politicians are responsible to get the best value while delivering the best service. This is no different than any other project. First, you start with the end product. What is it really going to look like? What is it supposed to do? Not unlike architectural drawings. Then it's analyzed for efficiency. Does it meet the mandate? Then it's critiqued by other experts. And in this case, I would much prefer that this organization be critiqued by Canadian experts and not Americans who have a totally different philosophy towards healthcare. It's costed out for budget purposes, usually with a 10% for overruns. Then the timelines are set from back to front, making it up as the project goes along. Minister Liepert speaks out of rolling bits and pieces over 4 years. Doing this in a piecemeal fashion is often not successful. What is this going to cost? I think of the millions of dollars being used for the payout for the CEOs of the now defunct health authorities. Jack Davies, $1.8 million and $300,000 yearly for life. That would pay for a lot of people to have their pain relieved, and certainly in some cases, I would suspect, have saved their lives. One of the things that I believe that is a concept that I would like to leave with you that I strongly believe should be happening is when I look around and I see that the Conservatives, Reform, and Canadian Alliance got together and were elected at the federal level as conservatives. In Saskatchewan, the Liberals and the Conservatives got together and were elected at the provincial level as the Saskatchewan Party. I don't believe that in a province, or actually in our system federally as well, where we have as many parties as we have, that the first past the post reflects any meaning of what the voter is trying to say. I believe we need proportional representation, and I believe that if we could get together, and I'm not just talking about the Liberals and the NDPs, I'm talking about all of those disgruntled people who aren't voting. If we could get them together and create something. And I don't care what you call it. This is me speaking personally. I'm not necessarily speaking as a Liberal policy. This is me speaking. I don't really care what you call it, because clearly the Conservatives didn't care what they called it, and neither did the Liberal and Conservatives care what they called it when they called it the Saskatchewan Party. What they wanted was some way for the voters to have their voices heard. And we must change governments on a regular basis. It cuts down complacency, it cuts down corruption. And I've always believed that public service is for the government. This really should not be a career choice. And unfortunately, when you stay there too long, that's what it becomes. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Bridget, for some very provocative comments and questions and a very substantive presentation. That's what we look forward to here at SAGPA. Now lunchtime, everyone, and please do talk among yourselves so that after we finish lunch and we come to the question period, we can really ask Bridget a number of key questions. She's given us a number of pointers there, so we look forward to a solid question and answer session after lunch. Thank you.